The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts, plus they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials, order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's December the 1st, 2023, and this is episode number 13. Thank you very much for joining us. And we hope you're all having a great time, great Cybertruck weekend. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Tesla Cybertruck delivery event, the Tesla Cybertruck's features and failings, and finally, our thoughts on the Tesla Cybertruck. And of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Chione, host of the YouTube channel Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today, at some point in the future, will be the aristocratic Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. And we'll also have the marvelous Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle O'Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out-of-Spec Studios, where he produces high-voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So, hi there, everybody. Hi there, Kyle.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Right. So we've had to make a few time changes here. Moving parts to this whole thing. So this is actually a recording that you're watching now, but we will be joining you live. It's all happening live. We're behind the scenes, most of us. Kyle will be on a plane actually when you're watching this. So that's that. Right. So if you haven't guessed it yet, the big news of the week is the launch of the Tesla Cybertruck. So it's been a long time coming, 2 years longer than originally promised, but now it's here. Yesterday, some 20 minutes or so after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, local time, Elon Musk drove a production Tesla Cybertruck onto the stage at the Gigafactory in Austin, Texas, and addressed the assembled crowd of Tesla faithful and shared some of the strengths and features of the Cybertruck. He said, I can play you that whole thing while we're talking about it, but just go over here and mute that. Sorry, we kind of do miss Martin here at this point in the morning. Okay, here we are. All this piddling about. Maybe we can cut this out.
I say leave it in. People should know what the back end process is like.
If the back end process is messy, let me tell you.
While you're getting this set up, I can talk about, sort of just so the audience knows, I was at the delivery event yesterday. So a lot of what we're going to talk about in this episode will be sort of what I experienced, what I was able to see, because just initially off the bat, it was totally different being there than watching it live, which, yeah, we'll get into all of this.
Well, you were at the original Cybertruck launch too, right?
Yes, I've been to both major Cybertruck events now.
Awesome. Okay, so we got the screen. So this is what was playing on the screen. Elon drove the truck up on the stage, and then I think there was some opening remarks. And this video was playing anyway. Actually, at the beginning, he'll come up drive the truck onto the stage after this little intro part. That's right. It's been a long night here. Elon Musk drove the truck on stage, and he says he thinks this is Tesla's best product, and he talked about its toughness and utility. The video was shown, and you'll see that coming up here, of the body withstanding an attack from both a Tommy gun and a pistol. And then the Tesla head of design, Franz von Holzhausen, threw a baseball at the passenger side window of one, which didn't break like the one did at the reveal when he threw a metal ball at it. So they also showed it pulling a truck pull sledge, the full distance of a course, ahead of a Ford F-350. That's a big commercial beefy truck, a Rivian R1T, and a Ford F-150 Lightning. And then they also showed it beating a 2023 Porsche 911 in the quarter mile while towing a Porsche 911, which is always a great little gimmick. He didn't mention price or range during the presentation, but that information went on the website during the event. So we have that for you and much, much more. So basically, there are three versions planned. A rear-wheel drive version that will only ship in 2025 that offers 250 miles of range and is priced at $60,990. There's an all-wheel drive trim with 340 miles of range and is priced at $79,990. And the Cyber Beast version, which they say is good for 320 miles and costs $99,990. That's the tri-motor version that goes 0 to 60 in 2.6 seconds. So, Kyle, you were there at the Gigafactory for all this presentation, and you stayed and talked to engineers, I think, until they kicked you out, basically. So what's like a top-line thing that you think our audience should know about the Cybertruck?
Oh, I don't know if there's one singular point that we can go to. I think it's just unique is the word that comes to mind. It's seemingly unlike any car I've ever reviewed or been around. Has a different presence to it, has a different operational strategy in many ways. And, you know, just being at the event was much, much better. I can't reiterate this enough. If I didn't come to this event, I would probably be making so much fun of Tesla right now for bad presentation. The specs look bad, and specs do look not great compared to what they originally promised. We'll get into that. Right. But just being able to understand how they designed this thing and meet with the people who did. And I'm right. Actually way more excited about it than I was going to the event.
Okay. That's true. And there's a lot of, you know, pushback from, you know, different people online, you know, different communities, or there's a lot of, you know, ridicule, or, you know, just a lot of people don't get it or think it's ugly. Well, it's the worst monstrosity ever.
Even the hardcore Tesla, everyone at the event, by the way, so disappointed. We'll get into the vibe of everything, okay. But I'm not a Tesla like lover. I'll give them right. All the crap in the world. My Model S falls apart. Like, I am not here to promote Tesla. I don't own any Tesla stock. Like, this is not my world, right? I just review cars. Right. And normally I'm the most when I go to these Tesla events, you know, some people are like, oh, Kyle, you really love Tesla. I'm like, yeah, there's parts of Tesla that are amazing, parts of Tesla that suck. But normally I'm like pretty critical, especially at these events.
Right.
Everyone after the truck was unveiled, so somber, so sad, so disappointed that it's not 40 grand and does 500 miles. I'm like, they've been lying to you all this whole time. So I think I came into this with such a no expectation type situation, and that I was very pleasantly surprised, as was Colton, because we didn't believe anything Tesla told us in 2019, which we shouldn't have, because that was all a lie. And I was like, oh, this truck it was the exact price I thought it was going to be, had pretty much the exact performance I thought it was going to be, and I'm okay with all of that. So okay. I was like trying to tell Tesla fans, like, this thing rocks. And why am I doing that? They're the ones who are supposed to love anything Tesla does. So I don't know. I thought it was a really interesting dynamic, actually.
So let's talk a little bit about some of those expectations and things. So it's starting at $20,000 higher than originally planned, I guess, in 2019. So besides the polarizing design, it's got that going, you know, against it, and it has less range, like you said, than we were told at the debut. So the price is somewhat understandable because of the time frame and inflation, but the range, let's put the 250 mile rear wheel drive version aside for now, but Kyle, 340 miles is a long way from 500 miles. Do you think this is due to the 4680 batteries not being as energy dense as expected, and do you think this range is going to result in a lot of cancellations?
I actually think we'll see a ton of cancellations. I said that when the first event went, it was $100 for you to say that yes, it was a reservation, but everyone was like, I ordered a Cybertruck. And it's like, no, you didn't. You put your, you know, spot on. So I think we're going to see a mass cancellation, but I don't think that's a surprise. I thought even if it was amazing, we'll see a mass cancellation, because someone who put $100 down 4 years ago, or even throughout the last 4 years, may not be in the financial situation, especially this time in the economy, to pony up 80 to 100 grand to take one of these things. So I don't think that's going to be a surprise that we'll see canceled orders. That's as expected. So were there, I know you asked another question. I'm sorry. I'm like half asleep.
Do you think the 4680 batteries, do you think that is what's kind of behind this difference in the range? Do you think they really had a lot more better specs and plan for that battery, because they already changed when it, this is like the second generation of this battery, that because first when they put it, they were putting in the Model Ys, right?
It's hard to speculate why Tesla did what they did 4 years ago. You know, the analogy I've been sort of wrapping my head around, or at least just this is what I think happened, which is, you know, a typical development cycle for a vehicle is 7 years traditionally. And that certainly is on a you know, accelerated path into recent years. We're even getting down to 2 year development cycles with some Chinese companies launching their vehicles. Mm-hmm. Tesla, and every company, by the way, starts the development process of a vehicle years ahead of market introduction or even the concept car phase and all of these things. And there's a very calculated industry standard as to how to introduce a new car to market. You work on it internally, you make sure everything, you know, looks okay. You do typically a concept car or some sort of small announcement that this is, you know, not real. And then you gauge the market feedback. If the market feedback is as expected, then you continue down the path of, you know, engineering the vehicle, building the factory, tooling everything up, and then eventually entering series production. I think what Tesla did was, they had their idea phase before even the concept car phase for most companies. And they had their design goals, or the goals that they wanted, you know, the attributes of the vehicle to have, which would be, here's the range we want to hit. Here's the charging we want to hit. Here's all of these things that are stretch goals. This is what they want to engineer. But then that was pitched to the public as, here's what we are doing and here's what the price will be, which I hope they've learned their lesson that that doesn't work. And we said it 4 years ago, which is like, this doesn't work. You can't do it. You mislead people doing it like this. And it leads to mistrust in the company. It leads to mistrust in the people. But I already had mistrust in the company and the people. So I think maybe that's why I'm okay with all of it, because I'm just so used to major, not just Tesla, but major car companies lying to us very often about, you know, what's going to happen into the future. It seemed like most people that were there took everything and were like fighting on Twitter about it, that Tesla is going to deliver the product they said they're going to deliver. It's going to be even better. And then it's like comes in way under promised. I think it was probably the biggest miss in Tesla history compared to what they had promised, to what they have delivered. And no shock from my side, but to everyone else, wow, huge disappointment. And so I think there was a lot of shock value. What I was experiencing, seeing everyone's reactions and them feeding off each other, which is like, wow, it's expensive. Wow, the range isn't great. I mean, Rivian has more range without the range extender for less money.
So we'll get into some of those comparisons in a bit there.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, then it comes down to, well, why isn't it as good? And 4680, at least in the Model Ys. Now, my understanding is they're going to be a slightly adapted 4680 cell for this one compared to the Model Y cell. But the 4680 Model Y is the worst Model Y by far. It's worse than the LFP ones. It really charges like crap. They seemingly don't degrade very quickly. They have good longevity and strength, at least according to our friend Brandon Flash, who is basically abusing his Model Y to test it for all of us, all the DC charging and deep cycles and all these things. But it charges very poorly, and basically its performance was lackluster in almost every category, from energy density to discharge performance. It was supposed to be the top cell, and it's really actually kind of the worst one. So
hopefully some of that engineering was also to make it cheap to manufacture as well, right? So I'm hoping that they hit that goal.
Well, the vehicle's priced at what it is. So to me, it doesn't matter what it costs Tesla to make it. I just need to know what I got to buy it for. And so, you know, it's just got to be good. I don't care if it's cheaper for Tesla to make it. But yeah, so lots of interesting topics, lots of interesting displays here. And we can certainly get into all of it. Look how good that Rivian looks right there, squatted, pulling that tractor.
Was that forest green? They have that? You know, those Rivian trucks really look nice.
If you go back a little bit, it could be launch green.
Okay. I was just thinking because it put me in mind of your truck. Is that it? No, it's the next one after this.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yeah, it's launch green. Oh, maybe it is forest green? No, launch green.
So, launch green. So that's the early one. So your Rivian was white originally, but just recently you have a video this week actually with this little update to your vehicle. But I thought it was just mentioned it here now that you mentioned the color. It looks great, I thought. At first, I didn't. So what color is it?
It's a custom color that we did to match Porsche's NATO olive green.
Ah, okay. And then you also have some sort of, not textures, but different lines and like patterning kind of very subtly in that as well.
Yeah, we use some of the Rivian Rebel Rally concept or like, you know, vehicles as inspiration. And also some things I've taken from different concept car wraps. It's super subtle. If you just look at the truck from a distance, it looks green. But when you get up close to it, you start to notice these cool patterns, and it's all, you know, custom printed color, custom printed design, all thanks to our friends at Test Bros and Rivian Bros in Chattanooga. We don't need to talk about it much on this podcast.
We go back to Cybertruck. So with this like big fall in range, promised range, the solution seems to be a range extender. So in the past, that means like a whole internal combustion engine, but now this is a battery that sits in the back of the Cybertruck. It takes up a third of the bed. It's rumored to be $13,000. I'm hoping you can still hear me. $16,000. And they say, well, it will give you 470 miles of range, which is still 30 short. What is this?
I'm demonstrating the Tesla Cybertruck range extender.
Okay.
Which is, this is a small wireless battery.
Oh, I see.
And this is my phone.
Oh, nice. It's the technology.
Yes.
Right. Oh, is it wireless? No.
No, but I'm just saying this cannot fully charge my phone. It's just a small addition. And then it goes on to the main battery pack. It has to be physically installed by the Tesla service center and uninstalled because it's close to 40 or 50 kilowatt hours and weighs probably 1,000 pounds, which eats into your payload, by the way.
Right. 2,500 pound payload. So a ton and a quarter, but put this in the bed and you have like a 1,000 pounds less, I guess. So 1,500 pound payload. I'm not really sure what to make of all that exactly, but I guess people will. Do you think it will sell any range extenders? It seems like
very few. I think I wouldn't be surprised if we never see the range extender.
Okay,
about it later. I think we should run through, sort of just the event, the specs, and then we can get into the accessories because we haven't really, to our audience, described the pricing or the specs or anything of this thing, and a lot of our viewers have not watched the presentation, I imagine.
Okay. Do you want to compare it with the competition right now?
Well, I think we should present what Cybertruck is. So, you know, for example, Tesla has it on their website. So if I go to Tesla.com, I can just roughly just get everyone to understand what the different versions are. And the specs. So the vehicle, just so everyone knows, was announced yesterday. Delivery started yesterday. Apparently 20 of them. I think we saw 10 being delivered, but we saw over 100 trucks throughout the whole Gigafactory Austin. And if everyone wants like a recount of the entire event, I'll of course have a video vlog of everything we're able to do. We had the whole entire factory to ourselves yesterday. And it was just really much better experience than whatever you all watched online, which looked awful.
Right.
And like the presentation was the worst part of what we did. So the $79,990 was exactly, I was spot on with the price. I was so thrilled because that's the most expensive you can make it, but still qualify for the federal tax credit. And so the dual motor will get the tax credit, built in America. I think the cells are built here in Texas, is my understanding.
That's
and
right.
So it's all very localized in terms of production. And so that will definitely qualify. And to me, the dual motor all-wheel drive version just seems like the sweet spot here. The rear wheel drive, again, don't trust anything Tesla says. They've proven it to us many times. Will it be available in 2025 for $60,990? We don't know. That might
Forever, right?
It might just disappear.
A lot of times Elon will come out after a product is announced and launched and he'll say, well, hardly anybody ordered this trim or this feature, so we're going to discontinue that, you know, to save money or whatever.
So I would focus on the ones that are available now, which are the dual motor. I saw both configurations yesterday, so all-wheel drive and the tri-motor Cyber Beast. And the dual motor, I think, is the sweet spot. For those who aren't on Twitter, Drew Baglino commented on some of my posts and confirmed some things we were interested. He's the senior vice president of Tesla Powertrain, I think is his title. Super nerd, basically, super cool guy. And he basically was confirming some things that I thought was interesting. So the front and rear motors have electromagnetic lockers, mechanical lockers, electromechanical lockers. So basically you'll have a physical diff lock in the front and a physical diff lock in the rear, which is fantastic. So I'm very thrilled with that. If you look at the direct competition to Rivian, Rivian chose to put no lockers in their dual motor and instead rely on brakes to do torque vectoring, which I showed when I reviewed the new dual motor system, doesn't work as well as you would want it to.
Right.
And so the Cybertruck, I think, just, you know, it's not nearly going to be as capable as the Rivian off-road, just based off the suspension, my guess. I don't know. We'll do all the testing. It has 2 more inches of total ground clearance than the Rivian, 17 inches in the Cybertruck. It's on 35-inch tires, just slightly bigger than the 34s that the Rivian is on. It might do as well off-road, but, you know, no sway bar disconnects. It's a much more basic suspension system in the Cybertruck when compared to Rivian. But
and it's right around the same price as Rivian, too, I just want to point out.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
Having rear steer will make it more maneuverable, and there's lots of things that I'm excited about here with Cybertruck. But the front and rear locker is a big win. That is a huge win for someone like me who definitely, if we get one, we're going to take it off-road, do all the things like I do with my Rivian. So I'm excited about that. In the tri-motor variant, it will pretty much directly mimic the Hummer EV's drivetrain setup. You'll have a mechanical locker on the front axle, and then in the rear, where you have a non-mechanically linked two-motor system, it will do a virtual locker, if you will. It will simulate some sort of torque management. And that tuning, no automaker has really dialed in up to this point. So we will do certainly all the tests of the virtual locker in the rear. We can do Rivian versus Hummer EV versus Cybertruck, and that'll be really, really great.
So a few weeks ago, somebody filmed the Cybertruck prototype struggling a bit on the stair step at Hollister Hills, like an off-road park, I guess. The same steps that an F-150 Lightning was later shown going up with apparent ease. So I just want to mention this because the thing that matters in driving off-road a lot is getting power to the wheels, which have traction at any given moment. So the best way to do that is with a physical differential locker. The F-150 Lightning has one on its back axle. Now, we don't know if it was engaged when the Cybertruck tried to go up the hills, but you know it does have these lockers front and back.
Yeah, anyway, I think can say it was not engaged because it was looking. I only watched the clip once, but it just looked really like poor performance from powertrain setup. I think they were trying to tune the brake calibration for brake based torque vectoring rather than with a mechanical locker because. Having dual lockers, this thing should just walk right up that hill.
Right. Lock in the back, like you said, is probably a virtual lock. So it's not like a physically, so there can be some slip, you know, doesn't work
only
quite as
in
well.
The tri-motor. In the dual motor, it will both be physical locked.
Right. I guess, which is the version that most people will likely buy. Because it's still like a 4.1 second 0 to 60 on that version.
Yeah, it's going to be fast enough.
Which, if that's plenty fast, really. And you save $20,000. Yeah, it sounds like really the play for sure. All right. So the thing, so it's very close in price, like you were saying, to the Rivian, but the Rivian offers like 410 miles at $80,000 to compare to 340 miles. So that's, you know, one strike, I guess, on the.
Yeah, the range is disappointing. There's no way to put it other than that. I came into it expecting it to be disappointing. Here we are. And so maybe my expectations were met. You know, this is not a work truck competitor. You know, the people at GM with the Silverado EV, even though they can't build them, they're, you know, sleeping easy last night because they got a vehicle that's EPA ranged without any silly range extenders at 450 miles. Now, granted, they have 240 kilowatt hours of batteries in their truck. But
that's $105,000.
Yeah, so just basically the same price as this. And, you know, I think people don't care about efficiency. I think they just look at a range number and say, my electric car goes 450 miles. That's a lot more than Cybertruck. How they got there, I don't think people dig into that story. We'll have to do all of the efficiency tests, the range tests, and everything like that. Of course, as soon as we can get our hands on a Cybertruck, we'll be laying it out because there's still so many unknowns here. And it might turn out that Cybertruck sucks. If it charges as poorly as 4680 Model Y, if the efficiency just is not there, and if the towing is not great, then already, you know, we're off to a bad start. The thing is, the charge port's in the completely wrong location for towing. You know, I love to have a front charge port with my Rivian. It just nose into a spot. So there's a lot of unknowns as to how well this truck is going to work still.
So real quick, you mentioned we were on the phone last night and you mentioned the rear, front and rear motors and the different layouts were kind of different. Want to go over that real quick?
Sure. Yeah.
Anybody knows, has this information really.
Right. Yeah. I got to spend some time with the powertrain team yesterday, which was really invaluable. And they went, so the Model S Plaid, which I thought they were just going to put that drivetrain in the Cybertruck and beef it up maybe for higher abuse loads. But, that is a tri-permanent magnet system. So you have two individual motors in the back of that vehicle, the carbon-wrapped ones. They're quite expensive, I imagine, for Tesla to make. And those are permanent magnet. And then the front motor is also permanent magnet. And that is for maximum launch performance and, you know, sort of efficiency underway. The thing is, though, with permanent magnets, when you're cruising 99% of the time, you're giving up a little bit of efficiency depending on how you control your back EMF with, you know, without an induction motor or a clutch disconnect. And we're very familiar with the concept of clutch disconnects. Tesla is doing this with the Semi because they use all permanent magnet motors on the Semi and they disconnect the hardcore, you know, low range, you know, power motor when cruising on the highway. And I thought they were going to do a clutch disconnect on the Cybertruck as well because they were working on that technology for Semi and I thought it would trickle down. It turns out they designed an entirely new rear drive unit for Cybertruck that I wouldn't be surprised if it makes its way into the Semi at some point in the future because it is a full induction system. It's a dual motor in a single housing. So it has the inverter, reduction gear, and motors all in one for both axles, very similar to the Lucid Sapphire motor or the Tesla motor in terms of design concept of what components are there. It's just three times as big. I mean, it's massive. And it doesn't make as much power. And so I walked up to this thing and I'm like, this doesn't add up. Why? What happened? And the guys were like, oh, it's an induction motor.
Right.
And induction motors generally are not as space efficient and certainly require a little bit more energy to get them spinning because you need to apply electricity to create a magnetic field to get them moving. So launch performance isn't as great, but there's two main benefits, maybe three main benefits to an induction system. Cost.
Right.
Less drag, less, you know, sort of flux related losses. You don't require a clutch disconnect. You could still get benefit from a clutch disconnect because you're spinning a gearbox inside that motor and there is inertia and there is some losses, but it's not nearly, you know, you have no sort of, flux losses, at least from like inside the motor creating drag because of a magnetic field. And the third, what was it? Reliability. Induction motors just kind of run forever. I mean, there's very, very little things to go wrong with induction motors. Not to say they don't, but most of the time, the things that do go wrong are like seals and coolant and all of these things. So,
and there's also induction motors don't have rare earth metals, which are or basically almost all mined in China and refined in China, and under historically lax environmental conditions or whatever. So induction motors are thought to be more environmentally friendly too than permanent magnet.
I just thought it was really interesting that they designed this new motor, and my guess is it'll make its way into semi and other products. But essentially the tri-motor Cybertruck is going to be the front motor is the primary axle in that case. That's what's going to be doing the highway cruising, and the rear motor is just going to be there when you tip into the throttle. So it's going to be a very front wheel drive experience. Now the tuning of the drivetrain, no question, Tesla's better at this than pretty much anyone except maybe Lucid. They're really going to dial in, I imagine, the way that the rear motor, you won't even notice it kicking in or kicking out. It's just going to feel very natural because, of course, there's no disconnect. It can just be on in an instant. The dual motor system, I'm guessing, has the front motor from, and this is just a pure guess, it has the front motor from the tri-motor in the back, because that is a rear permanent magnet single motor. And just from the number of parts count, I can't imagine that they would design, three separate motors for this truck, or four separate motors for this truck. Of course, there's probably some mounting differences, but I imagine that the electric machine, the base core product, is going to be the same front and rear, at least for the dual motor, the front motor out of the tri-motor being the rear motor out of the dual motor, permanent magnet with locker.
Right. Just maybe in a different casing.
Yeah, it could be. Of course, hard to say, but that wouldn't surprise me. We don't know that to be true. Right. But what we do know is that the dual motor has an induction front motor, single motor. So that's another new part that's being introduced here. And that is a very traditional setup. And that's how I personally would spec my vehicle, a rear primary axle that gives me all the power with a permanent magnet, that juicy hit off the line with a locker in the back. Just great control, great power management at low speed. Love a rear permanent magnet setup with a front induction motor that doesn't require a clutch disconnect, that's better for the environment, that's cheaper to manufacture, that's there just for the 20% or even 10% of drive time on the vehicle where I just need a little bit more power, where when I go wide open or I just need it to kick on. And this is the way like a Tesla Model 3 Performance is set up, or a Model 3 dual motor, or Model Y. This is that type of setup. And I think everyone's pleased with that. That's no problem. What's interesting is they chose to, on this front induction motor, on the dual motor system, being that it's a motor that is bespoke to the dual motor, put a front locker on it. So I think that might even be better off-road than the tri-motor. We'll have to see how they do their drivetrain tuning, but that was really interesting. Some other points, just to run through them very quickly. It's an 800-volt system architecture, which is certainly as expected. We all knew that was coming. But what we didn't know was how was it going to interface with the existing superchargers that are capped at 500 volts. It's a topic we've talked about with Lucid, with Hyundai Kia Genesis, with Taycan, interfacing with the existing charging infrastructure. And Tesla's solution is very similar to sort of Volkswagen Group's PPE, which is to do a split pack. And GM does this as well for Hummer EV, but in the opposite sense. Hummer EV basically splits to double the voltage. They go into series instead of parallel to get faster charging with lower current. Here, to adapt to older, existing infrastructure, they're going to take their 800-volt system and turn them into two 400-volt systems. How the tuning works, how they're going to run the AC compressor off of all of these things and the other high voltage components still remains to be seen. But, we'll certainly be testing that. But Drew at least confirmed it does split pack for existing infrastructure charging.
So here's a question. So now we have the supercharger network right now is pretty much all version 3. So max of 250 kilowatt power. The version 4 is now being put in the ground, but using the power conversions or the equipment for version 3s. So basically the version 4s are there, but they basically deliver the same power output as version 3s. So what we expect version 4s to eventually have, like, is it 1,000 amps, 1,000 watts or volts? 1,000 amps, 1,000 volts?
We're not sure what it'll be. I think it'll be close to 700 or 800 amps, probably peak. I don't think there'll be megawatt dispensers,
right?
But I think they'll probably be 350 to 450 kilowatt maximum.
But the voltage up around 1,000.
Yeah, but I don't know. The thing is, when everyone says 800 volts, we don't know if that means 680 or 950. That's
voltage is squishy, right? It's all over. It changes. There's a whole range to voltage.
Of course, and each car lives in a different one. So, like, Lucid is notoriously extremely high voltage.
It's closer to 900, right?
Yeah, it's 926 full. And so, but then you have like Taycan, which is like, you know, when you have a dead Taycan, you're like 640, but they're both 800 volt vehicles. So it's the class of car that they're in.
So what I'm wondering is once they have like the higher voltage, you know, superchargers out there, the Cybertruck should be able to charge faster if it could charge at its native 800 volt state then, right?
Well, that would indicate that there would be a current limitation on the 400 volt cap situation. We also don't know if that 250 kilowatt max charging is there because of existing infrastructure, which there are certainly third party chargers that can output way more power than what the superchargers can do. You know, for example, we now have 400 kilowatt chargers installed in the ground in the U.S. running right now that can do, 600 amps at high voltage. And so, you know, they can do it.
Just this week, I think Lotus, the car company Lotus, owned by Geely, announced they have, like, I think it was a 450 kilowatt.
Yeah, and they have a 480 kilowatt in China.
Right.
It's true. So it's like, you know, the high power charging is no problem. You can put as many. I charged on like a 3 megawatt station once, but you only use what the car requests. So it doesn't matter. So all of these things we need to find out. I don't know why they would rate the vehicle based off of what the infrastructure can do other than just to set customer expectations when they use superchargers. But that was a real disappointment to me, was only 250 kilowatt charging. We're talking about a battery that's over 100 kilowatt hours that need, you know, is going up against Silverado EV that can charge at 365 kilowatts. And here it is coming in well underperforming in the charging category, which is not unusual for Tesla recently. Tesla vehicles have not been charging well recently. The curves have been weak, and that's, I guess, nothing really new, but people don't realize how great some of these other cars are charging on the market. What does it mean for longevity? What does it mean for warranty? I'm not sure, but this is the main area I'm initially disappointed by without testing. Is knowing the limitations of 4680 Model Y, seeing the specs for this vehicle, I don't think it's going to charge that great.
Right. So maybe not the best road tripper. I guess we'll find out, because you know what? Tom Malogny was suggesting last night that we go cross country in the three of us, possibly in the Cybertruck Ford F-150 Lightning, and maybe a Rivian or a Silverado or a Hummer, whatever we can get our hands on.
Don't worry, we'll be doing it one way or another, because we do race to Vegas with all of these things. So
right,
you want to do cross country, count me in. Sounds like a blast.
That's what I was thinking. That'd be a freaking great time, and we can meet all along the way. That'd be so fun.
It's got to be a race. We don't have time to talk to people.
We
can't compare them if we're sitting around.
We'll have to hash that out. So getting back to charging, they didn't say anything about the charging during the presentation, which is kind of a bad sign to me, right? So because you talk up your strengths. So on the website, they only say up to 128 minutes or 28 miles added in 15 minutes. I don't know if that's a great number or not. I don't know. It doesn't really.
But again, that's based off of, I think, 428 watt hour per mile is what the EPA rating is. So just over 2 miles per kilowatt hour, which doesn't particularly seem that efficient.
Right.
I'm not sure if that's confirmed, but that was just a number that I saw on Twitter. Someone screenshotted from a website to gauge that. So we can gauge rough battery pack capacity. I haven't done the calculations. I just saw it a few minutes ago, but I'm sure someone in the comments will mention it. And so, the thing is, it just seems so underperforming to what they initially delivered. I understand everyone's disappointment. I'm not to say it's not justified. Right. You know, Tesla blatantly straight up lied to everyone 4 years ago, probably knowingly, I can't prove that, of course, that this is not going to happen. And that was my take on it at the time, which was, yeah, like, okay, whatever, ugly, weird truck launches with, you know, outer space specs, believe it when I see it. And of course, it didn't happen. But
so I saw a picture of a screenshot or a picture of the screen taken while it was being charged. It was at 71%. It was charging at 77 kilowatts and had 55 minutes remaining.
Yeah, that seems like a 4680 charge curve to me.
Man, it just seems kind of bad.
Bad.
Like uncompetitive. Like, okay.
Well, Rivian's bad too.
Okay.
Yeah, Rivian's bad too. Lightning's not great. I wouldn't say it's uncompetitive. All the trucks charge like crap.
Right, except for maybe, even the Hummer?
Yeah, well, the GM stuff always charges weird. It's not consistent. Right. So, yeah that's got the big peak, and I haven't tested a GM product on the newest software, which apparently takes care of a lot of the idiosyncrasies we were noticing. So I can't comment on that yet because I don't know what the new software does. But at least in the past, it was annoying to charge those.
Right. Okay. Was there other information here? Oh, we hear a little.
Yeah, might as well, right?
Little video
engineering truck. Hell yeah.
Yeah, we were just, I mean, we had the factory to ourselves. So basically, they had like security that wouldn't let us go back to where we came, but they weren't like rushing us out. They were also, you know, viewers or whatever. So we're all just hanging out. And they're like, oh, let's go sit in this truck. And they're like, hey, man, I mean, you go sit. And so, yeah, we were just like playing around with stuff and touching and feeling everything.
So, really like, cool. So did you sit in the, in the backseat, this clip, you said you have lots of headroom.
I wouldn't say lots, but I fit.
Okay. And you're 6'2"?
6'1", yeah.
6'1". Okay.
I don't think my dad, who's 6'5", would fit, but I think plenty of leg room. Width felt great. That glass roof does come down.
Okay. So people were talking about that, you know, prior to this all happening, and that was one of those things that, did you have a chance to sit in the front seat?
Nope, did not sit in the front seat.
Okay. Because it's wondering about the sight lines with those A-pillars and like with that dash being so far forward, you know, it's like stretches out like a football field in front of you.
Yeah, I spoke to my friend Eric, who sort of runs the media side for Sandy Monroe's team, and he drove it down into a parking garage. He said he could not see the front of it and it was a little bit sketchy, but they have a front camera. So, I mean, I think that's the thing with the Cybertruck is it's going to be very weird to drive with steer-by-wire. We haven't even mentioned that yet. Right. It's going to be a totally different input strategy to other vehicles. It's going to have, unlike any other experience, because no one's used to a steer-by-wire system.
No one has one on the market right now?
No one has
steer-by-wire.
Say that again?
So Canoe is not really out there, but I believe their system is steer-by-wire as well, right?
Well, you can't buy one. No one's driven a Canoe. And also the Lexus RZ has a prototype. But that's also, you can't buy that. So I think this will be the first fully adapt. There are adaptive ratios through a mechanical system like BMW is, adaptive steering ratio technology that's been out for 20 years. But this is like seemingly put in 45 degrees or even 90 degrees angle and you're at full lock. At low speed. So it's very interesting and it changes based off the speed you're driving. You're not going to be cranking this yoke around.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. It's all down to the tuning. It can be great or terrible depending on how Tesla does it. And it can be software updated, which I'm not sure you want your steering system software updated. I certainly know there's a group of people that don't. I'm okay with it because it's interesting to me. And I'm also a little bit forgiving with software and these types of things, but I totally understand.
People's cars start steering completely different than it did the day before. I think there might be issues with that. I'm not sure.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm not saying they will. I didn't talk to anyone from their steering team at all, but I'm just saying that these are the possibilities that Tesla will have full control over the vehicle. So I do have to kind of get wrapped up and moving here pretty quickly, but I just kind of wanted to share, rough final thoughts on the Cybertruck, which I have not commented on the way it has looked or anything ever. Until I saw one last week in Loveland, a series production one. I kept my mouth shut as best as I could because I didn't know what to think. We didn't know the specs of the series production models. We didn't know anything about it. So now that we know enough about it. I've been starting to form my opinion of the truck, but I still need to drive it. I still need to test it to, mm-hmm. to fully either say this is a definite buy, a have fun for a year or two, or a stay away feature. I don't know. It can be any of those three for me right now. But I love the way it looks. I really am so into it.
Okay.
I hated it. Hated it when it launched. All the way, and I thought it was so stupid all the way through until I saw the series production one, honestly, last week in Colorado. And then I was like, okay, this is really freaky. It's, you know, I always come back to, I love weird, quirky, different, interesting cars that are conversation pieces. And I love cars that offer a unique driving experience unlike anything else. And I think with that steer-by-wire, with the huge, you know, air chambers in the suspension, this is going to be super comfy. I spoke to some of the interior team, by the way. They're like, e-tron levels of quiet. I'm like, get out of here. They're like, no, we really refined this thing. They're like, you just have to try it. I'm mm-hmm. like, great, get us a test truck. They're like, not our department. but, you know, it just sounds like it's way more refined than we're thinking. And, you know, like, super comfortable, super quiet. These are all good things that I'm looking forward to experiencing. So I love the way it looks. I know that's crazy. I think as a truck, it's going to be, this was the guy who came to, I hung out with him last night. He came and brought his truck. He just took delivery of it. He came and to a Tesla event. And we all sat in his truck, and hopefully we'll be able to drive that one for out of spec at some point. So lots okay. of stuff. Just to finish up, the specs on paper look unimpressive, but it just needs to be slightly better than Rivian and Lightning at the moment. And honestly, the Tesla fans will buy this for 1 or 2 years. The big question is, when it has to actually compete as a truck, mm-hmm. how will it do? And right now, it needs updates. They need, you know, to have better charging, better range, all these things. The range extender, that seems like a very un-Tesla move. Tesla's always about reducing things, reducing complexity, mm-hmm. You know, engineering everything into the vehicle that it needs. And this just feels very un-Tesla.
Right.
So not into the range extender situation. Takes up, you know, your payload, takes up your bed space. I would probably still get it because I need, with towing, as much range as possible. But it still remains to be seen if you can tow 11,000 pounds with the range extender, depending on your tongue weight. Calculation.
Right.
Eats into payload. And so, you know, how is that all going to work? I'm not sure. Overall, I'm just so excited to drive it. Watching them move around, it's very different. It feels like a different planet that we're on seeing these things. And I'm super here for it. Maybe I'm almost more into it because everyone else kind of hates it on the internet. And I'm just like, I don't know that.
Right.
I'm like excited for the underdog, if you will.
Gotcha.
I don't know if there's a little bit of that going on there, but I got to tell you, I'm like everyone, all the Tesla fans obviously were disappointed because of the price. And so I think Tesla may have a real problem on their hands here. But all I want is like, I want a reservation and I don't have one. Everyone thinks I reserved one. I don't have one reserved. I got to buy a used one or something.
Tom might have a lead on something. We were talking yesterday a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I've had so many viewers reach out with who are early on the list, and it's basically mm-hmm. whoever's the first one is where we're going.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. whoever takes delivery, let me know. We'll film it and write you a check as a thank you. But yeah, just so excited, really. That's all. I just can't wait to drive it. So we still don't know. Can't make final decision, but I'm pretty into it.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's still a few other things that we can talk about with Martin and Tom and get their opinions here, which we'll do in a moment. But yeah, so thanks for coming on so early and recording this with me now and getting all those details out there. Any word when the first deliveries after this happen? Do we have to wait until 2024?
That's what I was thinking, like, okay, is this it for the year?
Right.
I don't think we know, and it would not surprise me if that's the case. But hopefully we actually start to see them going out and you know, making their way to service centers and entering the process and doing the thing. I'm not sure if the early owners had to sign anything that said people can't test their vehicles or show them off or say things. Like I said, someone drove straight from this event to the Tesla after party, which is where like everyone who didn't go to the event was hanging out here in Austin. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he was letting people in the truck, check. It didn't seem like there were any restrictions or anything like that. I'd be surprised if they made general customers do that, but
yeah,
overall,
no, I don't think so.
Yeah. Overall, I wouldn't say I'm thrilled, but I'm excited. And I loved how open the engineers were to talk to us about the trucks. That was the whole purpose of going. I learned so much, more than I could ever put into a podcast just because of time. And yeah, we have no lack of content with the Cybertruck for sure.
All right. Well, again, thank you very much for that. And now we'll turn it back over to Dominic with Tom Martin. All right. Hey there. Good morning. Hey, it's nice to see you guys in real time now. Hey, everybody out there in the audience.
I need Thanks for joining us. Hold on. There we go. We got some lights. Almost too much.
So this past 24 hours have been pretty crazy. What with the whole Cybertruck announcement and reveal an event, and then catching up on trying to get all the information, you know, because it wasn't all at the event. You know, we've had to just scrounge through the site and, you know, check Twitter for, you know, just people having, you know, little leads of clips of information here and there. And then with our crazy travel schedules, trying to get us all coordinated. So some of us have only had a couple hours sleep. I think Tom, you're up all night talking too on with us.
Yeah. I'm still getting adjusted. Just got back a day or so ago from almost 2 weeks in Thailand. So I'm still jet lagged and everything, but all good. All's good. You couldn't miss this. What a big event in the world of electric vehicles.
Yep. And Martin, how are you feeling? Just to catch up with you, because it's been a while. You've been sick for a couple of weeks now. Is that?
I still am. It's been a month now. It's just lingering. It's lingering, and it wasn't COVID, but I can't shake it. But anyway, Kyle says we can take over. I love that the minute he said goodbye, we were about 500 people were watching in real time. And the minute Kyle said goodbye, it dropped by like 20. So there's clearly people out there who just tune into this show just to hear what Kyle thinks. And they're like, these losers can go screw themselves. Like, oh, we're off. There's a few. Oh no, it's 25 people have gone now. So don't say that, Kyle. People are here for you. But the rest of us, the rest of our viewers, hopefully here for everyone. And it's great to be here, and it's great to be talking about this. It's so exciting.
So Tom, I guess you followed all that we've said so far, and so do you have any questions, or do you have other information that you think we should talk about right away?
No, I mean, not. I think Kyle did. First of all, Kyle did a great job of going over a lot of stuff. You know, we could take a long time to digest all this and get everybody's opinions, but he did a good job of doing an overview. I'm interested. You know, we don't have more information on the battery range extender. We don't have more information on the the vehicle to load capabilities and the vehicle to home.
We can talk about that a little bit, though.
Yeah. Okay. We can absolutely talk about that a little bit. I don't think Kyle really touched on that much, which is interesting. The vehicle to home feature seems really cool. It'll deliver up to 11.5 kilowatt to your house. You do need to get the Tesla gateway, though. It won't just work out of the box. You need to have a Tesla universal wall connector. And it's interesting that they specifically said the Tesla universal wall connector. They didn't say, you know, the Tesla wall connector. So they said the Tesla universal wall connector and the Tesla gateway. If you have an existing Tesla Powerwall system, then it already has the gateway. So you don't need to get that. But if you don't have that, Kyle just posted. Also, I have V2H info and how it'll work with NACS. Okay, good. We'll have to hit on this next week a little bit more than Kyle, but so that's a cool feature, and I love how they show it charging a Ford F-150 Lightning on the side of the road.
Revenge.
They're returning the favor. If you remember, Ford, when they were introducing the Lightning, showed the Lightning rescuing Teslas on the side of the road. So that's all good. Good gamesmanship there. That's fun to see them doing that. But I mean, that's good that it has that feature. It's got four outlets, two inside the truck and then two in the back of the cab. Interesting, they don't have any in the frunk which is a good place to have an outlet. I've actually used mine in my frunk many times. So it's interesting that Tesla didn't stick one up there up in the front. Very good to, like, I've used it when I'm working outside with battery powered tools and I have my chargers in there charging the batteries as I go. You could put them in the back too. It's just depending on how you have the truck parked. It's good to have outlets at all points of the vehicle if you're using it for work. So good stuff. I know we're going to get into opinions and everything. I'll do a quick overview. It is disappointing. You can't say that, it's not Tesla didn't deliver what they had said they were going to deliver. All that said, I still want one. As a content creator, it's content gold to have something like this. So I'm going to go through with my reservation. It's 30,000 more. I was intending on getting the dual motor version all along, which they originally said was $50,000. Now it's 80,000. So it's actually more expensive than my Lightning trim right now. Lariat with the extended range battery pack is right at like 79 and change. It's basically the same. It's a push with an extended range Lariat trim Lightning.
Right. Just to remind everybody, what kind of range is your Lightning have?
So it's EPA 320. So they're saying 340. So it's a little bit more EPA range. It'll be interesting to get these things side by side and do a real world range comparison test, because I think it'll be close. We'll see. That's going to be interesting. Somebody mentioned about the frunk. Yeah, the frunk is really tiny. That's a big disappointment on my end as well. You guys know I talk a lot about how much I love the mega power front on the Lightning. It's so ridiculously useful, and that thing looks tiny. What was the capacity of it? Do you know the
frunk?
Yeah, the frunk. How many cubic?
No one mentioned the frunk. I think it was not mentioned.
Half the size of the F-150 Lightning by liters.
Because the F-150 is 14.1 cubic feet.
Oh, so that's probably how you looking measure, at yeah.
around seven. Somewhere around there.
Just replying. Somebody's asking if I have a Cybertruck reservation, and I do not.
I think the specs. I think the specs are super interesting that you didn't really go through with Kyle. Rightly so, because you want to hear about the experience and right. getting a tour. And incidentally, can I say? I mean, just amazing that the engineers. And I always say this about Tesla: they get judged on Elon Musk, and yet, like all car companies, I judge Toyota on their crud marketing and trying to, say EVs are rubbish. But actually, the engineers at Toyota are probably all great girls and guys, and the engineers at Tesla, no doubt, are great. Educated, insightful girls and guys. And I'm so pleased that you got to hang out with those. My favorite Tesla events recently have been when Elon Musk gets out of the way and they have people on stage that get to have their say, much like an Apple keynote as well. And I love the way that Tesla have embraced that recently and put other people in the spotlight. They didn't hear, unfortunately. It was an Elon moment, which is not my favorite personally. So to have a look at the specs here, 250 kilowatt charging maximum. 128 miles added in 15 minutes. And then those details there on weight, 6,800 pounds.
So that's not a bad 20s. Weight, actually. 68. That's lighter, I believe, than the Rivian R1T, which is
lighter than the Rivian, a little heavier than a Lightning.
Kind of not so bad.
It came in right in the center of EV truck at the moment. What their competitors, they're late to the game, they're earlier than some, and I think they sort of kind of came in about where EV truck specs are right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, there's a lot of disappointment out there because I think more was promised, but in actuality, the actual thing is necessarily, I mean, it depends. There's so many different ways of looking at it, of making comparisons to different things. If you look at like the rear wheel drive version compared to
I think that rear wheel drive whenever I come for years.
Right. And as we said earlier in this show, I don't know if that's a rear wheel drive will even happen.
It might be one of those. Well, nobody ordered it, so we dropped it.
One of those. I think what was most disappointing from because if you know half a thing about electric vehicles and the audience to this show, no more than most. So if you're listening or watching this, you're tuning in, week out. We make assumptions about you, the audience. We do a certain type of podcast on this show, where we're not. We try and bring everyone along for the ride. Everyone's welcome. We assume you know what a CHAdeMO plug looks like versus a CCS plug. And if not, There's great, you know, Tom, Kyle, Dom all have great YouTube channels that can help explain EVs. So, you know, we assume that the audience know a little bit about that. So I don't think anybody in the audience was under the assumption that they were going to deliver a 500-mile truck that was this heavy, this, you know, and do 500 miles on EPA, the same as no one thinks that the Roadster's ever coming. Like, nobody who knows a little bit about EVs thinks that there is any technology in the world right now that can deliver a small, compact, 2+2 open-top car, low to the ground, not double, because you could make a triple-stack battery and climb up into the Roadster and do, was it 600 miles, they said, or 1,000 kilometers, 600 miles, ultimate smackdown to combustion cars. The Roadster is... they're fantasy specs. So nobody who knows a little bit about EVs is ever expecting the Roadster to arrive. The Roadster's never arriving with those specs until serious battery technology has changed. And I think the same for the Cybertruck. But I guess there's a lot of fans who are expecting Tesla to pull a rabbit out of the hat. And actually what they pulled out was reality, which 99% of people can deal with. And yeah, 1% of the faithful are like, ah, hang on a minute. You know, you didn't do magic.
It sounded like at the event, like Kyle was saying, like the faithful that were there were, you know, pretty wild, disappointed. There's a lot of disappointment going on. Which, you know, I haven't really delved into the Twitter sphere where a lot of, you know, the Tesla fans kind of hang out nowadays. So I'm not really sure the sentiment over there. I know on, like, so I followed Threads a lot yesterday, and the sentiment there, you know, is mostly negative because these are not Tesla fans for the most part right now. And there's a lot of, you know, reactive statements, you know, just because of the hot water that Elon himself has been in and his, you know, close association with Tesla. So it's just like a negative sentiment generally over there anyway. So I'm wondering, you know, who's left to buy it? Like how disappointed are the Tesla faithful? Like they had what, over a million, maybe a million and a half reservations?
The trackers out there that claim that they know said 2 million. Okay. Elon Musk said on the most recent earnings call over a million. So that could be a million and one, could be 2 million. But that's the most official guidance that we have from Tesla on a regulated earnings call is over 1 million.
Okay. Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to see how that evolves going forward. We don't have any visibility in the cancellations. I'm pretty sure that Elon's not going to talk up that. But of course, you never know. You know,
no, that's not happening. You know, it's. I think the cost and the range are the two biggest things that people are going to be bothered by. You know, everything else, it doesn't seem like he fell short on too much. But the fact that he came out big 4 years ago and was like, you know, it's going to go 500 miles. It's going to cost $40,000. Now, most people realize that the lowest cost version wasn't going to be the one that goes the furthest. But, you know, he did give the three, the tri-motor, the dual motor, the pricing back then. And we know the world changed a lot in that. Over that period, you know, I mean, vehicles all went up, electric vehicles in particular. Ford had like three or four price increases, but then as the supply chain started to even out, they lowered the price, they came back down to earth, and now the prices are kind of similar to what they were when the Lightning first launched, except for the lowest Pro trim, which we said many times was just way too cheap. You know, $40,000 for the Pro was just, we said it on the podcast. I even said it to Darren Palmer and even Jim Farley to his face. You have to be losing money on that thing because, you know, you can't sell a vehicle for $40,000 with, you know, even the small battery. And he kind of said, well, you know, the Lightning range of vehicles will be profitable. Like he kind of admitted that, well, the lowest one, we're not going to make money on that. So we expected the price to go up, but $30,000 more for the dual motor, is that's a big pill to swallow. And then, you know, if it was 30,000 more and it went 500 miles, you could say, well, you know, look at it outpaces everything on the market, but it really doesn't range wise. It's pretty much, you know, just fits right in there with Lightning and Silverado EV has even more range. So, you know, it's interesting. I still want one though. You know, that's the thing. It's a shiny new toy. And I think a lot of people are going to still want them. But I think once that initial wave of people that maybe have enough money to put into something that maybe they don't need dies out. It's going to be really interesting to see how this competes with the existing trucks out there, with Silverado, with Ford's T3, which is going to be out in, you know, year and a half or so.
Ram,
you know,
Rev. I mean,
the Lightning was there. Let's rush to market. Let's get an electric truck out there. Let's learn a little bit about this Lightning. T3 is the vehicle that the truck that Ford really is putting a lot of their, you know, eggs in the basket for. And that's a year and a half away. You know, we'll probably start hearing a lot about it in less than a year and a half. So how quickly is Tesla going to be able to ramp up production of these? That's going to be real. That's what I really want to know, is how quickly will he be able to get this into serious volume production? I think it's going to take a while. I mean, anybody knows anything about manufacturing just looks at this and says, Jesus, it's going to take them a long time to be able to pump thousands of these out every week. Let's see, maybe Tesla will pull the rabbit out of the hat and quicker than we think, but I don't think we're going to get high volumes of deliveries till, you know, maybe the end of next year. I hope I'm wrong, but let's see.
I think there's so much we need to digest with this, as Tom said, and there's a lot we need to work out and to filter out the noise and to work out what really matters from this, because everybody who is almost paid to comment on these things, like websites, podcasts, YouTubes, channels, they all want to have an answer. Like Marques Brownlee said, 123 kilowatt hour battery. And yet there's a Tesla blog that I like that's like 144 kilowatt hour battery. And Tesla haven't said. Now, they also have some efficiency figures on their website in the small print that's very like dark gray on a black background. And you can work backwards from that. And that would suggest it's more like 144 with a big battery. And I don't know where Marques gets 123 from. Maybe he was told. So everybody wants to have an answer on this already. And we just don't know stuff. So I would urge some caution.
123 sounds pretty reasonable, though. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's the usable. But yeah. But I look through the EPA documents, because everybody has to apply for each model year. They have to apply to the EPA for a certificate to have their, you know, cars licensed. And they don't have the Cybertruck up there yet. But when they do, I'm checking it like every day looking for that. And I will definitely, you know, let everyone know what the number is.
Which brings me on to, I'm glad you mentioned that, Dom, like a couple of my thoughts on last night. Now, I'm so pleased Kyle mentioned it. I've seen nobody else mention this anywhere. The show was a disaster last night. It was real amateur hour. It was like a high school production. There was no lights on Elon. So you could see his body up to here, and there was nothing above it. He was very poorly briefed. So the people around him, my experience of working with very high net worth individuals and very powerful people, and my experience of being around those people and seeing who are around them, it takes a real special stage manager, director, PA to say, no, that's wrong. Stand here. Don't do that. To direct people like this, like everybody there would be scared to say, you're standing in the wrong place, Elon, or have an earpiece to go, because he went, oh, let's jump on the top of the Cybertruck. And he did. And he was in the darkness. Like, the whole thing was a disaster. Now, look, I watch Apple keynotes all the time. And Tim Cook, one of the most powerful people in tech, he gets it right. That was the Halloween keynote. I watched the Polestar keynote that was about an hour long 2 weeks ago. That was beautifully, it was in front of a massive live audience, beautifully presented, really well done. And this brings back to one of the points that I say very often, if you haven't heard it. Tesla is not the minnow. Tesla's not the upstart. Tesla is not the scrappy punk trying to... Tesla is the biggest, you can say BYD, $770 billion market cap today, but... BYD also make plug-in hybrids as well, and they sell more combined with EVs. But Tesla's the biggest pure EV seller in the world. Tesla is at the top table. Tesla are doing it best. They're making some of the best stuff. They're the biggest company. Just get it right. Like, just don't try and pretend that you're still sort of like the outcast, the upstart, trying to maintain that. It doesn't work anymore, because it just looked such amateur hour. It was awful. And that brings me to my second point. All of these numbers say estimated 100K, estimated 320 miles of range. You're 4 years late with this. That's ridiculous. And it's just amateur hour on behalf of Tesla, because they really glossed over all of the awesome, amazing things about this vehicle, how they're changing production, how they're moving to 48-volt system, changing the way the vehicles are made, an Ethernet-connected vehicle with distributed modules, and it's fascinating the way they're changing production with this. Now, that was all shared with Kyle by the engineers. And I think old Tesla would have shared and showed off the steer-by-wire technology, which has been in development, I think, for 6 years at Tesla now. It explains why they had the yoke come around. They knew this tech was coming. They've been working on it for 6 years. Things like PowerShare, which went live on the Tesla website. So they're getting into V2G and V2H. Only a year ago, Elon Musk was saying, V2G and V2H is dumb. Buy a Tesla Powerwall. Don't pull electricity from your vehicle. It's dumb. It's stupid. We'll never do it. And yet, a blink of an eye later, he goes, oh, by the way, we've got this thing called PowerShare and it'll power your home. So what can we believe anymore? I just think it's messy and it frustrates me because Tesla are doing amazing things. Go and check out the PowerShare section of the website. Like Tom says, you know, with the universal wall connector, etc. It all makes sense. But it frustrates the heck out of me that none of that was shared last night. This sort of shoddy, sloppy presentation didn't even launch a vehicle because it's all estimated specs. Sort of limped into the world. And I'm like, oh, man, you're just blowing it because if they'd have done this right, there's so much they could have boasted about. And I think it would have knocked everyone's socks off. And instead, lots of people are disappointed. I'm disappointed about that.
Yeah, we didn't. Elon really didn't talk about the truck very much at all. It was just kind of like very high level things. And this is a delivery event. So here, I'm going to deliver them and see you later. Like there was so much to talk about. The power sharing could have been something that he had a whole, 10-minute presentation on. And that's an important feature for the vehicle. And it's really strange that he
he could have had someone, an engineer from that part of the company come out and explain it. So he didn't have to, do all that himself.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're doing things that way. Yeah. I don't know, Tom, what did you think of the presentation yourself?
It was kind of a joke. I was like, when it was over, I'm like, really? That's it? Like, we're not going to talk about any of the other features. We're not going to see more. Like, it was a delivery event, and that was it. It wasn't any pomp and circumstance, no Tesla normal, what they do and really overplay stuff. It was Elon standing in the back in the dark, having 10 minutes of talking briefly about the vehicle and then given some, some keys and that's it. I mean, there's a lot that he should have talked about. Right. I'm curious about how those the push buttons are going to work, the door to open the doors, when it's I walk out to my truck in the morning, there could be a quarter inch of ice on the window and on the windowsill where those buttons are. How do I press that button if there's a quarter inch of ice on over it? I don't know. How does the door open? I mean, I'm sure they figured all that stuff out. So tell us in this presentation, talk a little bit about the little things. You might notice we have these strange little buttons here, but don't worry. We did extensive cold weather testing. This is how it works. So there's a heater in there, a melt heater. I don't know how they're going to get around that. Do they expect us to go out there and just chop the ice, bang it, and break the ice to be able to press that button? There's a lot to know about. It's such a unique vehicle and such an interesting vehicle. That was a terrible job at explaining it and giving us some information about it. It was a delivery event. That was it.
Right.
Can I
guess we shouldn't expect it more because that's what they called it, but we were all expecting more.
Can I also ask them to stop throwing things and shooting things at it? The joke was done 4 years ago. I don't care. Like, if you genuinely need a vehicle because you're worried about being shot, then you need more than a Cybertruck, my friend. You need a tank or a personal bodyguard. And that comes back to my frustration with this whole event last night. Again, they're like, hey, Franz, throw a ball at the window, which was a baseball or a rubber ball or something. And
that was a big fail, I thought.
And why I'm like, that? Like,
I mean, I guess they were making fun of themselves with that. There could
but
be
no one
no
laughed.
Other...
Yeah, but yeah, nobody in the room laughed. It wasn't funny joke, ha ha.
You couldn't break any car window with a baseball.
So, and all this whole kind of, we shot it with a pistol and a Tommy gun and Joe Rogan shot an arrow at it. No one cares. They are reading the room where this isn't driven by Elon or marketing or whatever. Literally nobody is buying that truck because they shot things at it. The joke's done, was done 4 years ago. Stop it, Tesla. Nobody cares. My worry about them reading the room so wrong is they always read the room so right. Remember those especially the launches that I know, you know, I know Semi-Launch and the Roadster coming out the back of it, and like the oh crap moment. Yeah. Like, right. if only they had the tech to build the Roadster, but never mind. But like, and also, you go way back and you watch those events where they showed off battery S, Model S battery swapping. And yeah, I know that people in the comments will say that he did that to get subsidies in California. And I understand all the arguments around battery swapping. But you go back to those early events, it felt like they were changing the world, like moving the needle. And it was exciting. And oh man, I got to be part of this thing called Tesla. And you watched last night and you're like, maybe I'm an outlier. It didn't talk about any of the things I'm really excited about with Cybertruck. And was like, oh, you had the world tuning in, and all that people are talking about is the range sucks and the price sucks. But right. Again, like I said, the viewers and listeners to this podcast have half a brain, and they knew it was going to be that. So I don't think anyone should have been surprised at range and price.
I think that one of the biggest improvements, though, where they did actually move the needle, is the 48-volt low-voltage system. I mean, that's never been done before, right, in production vehicles. So everything has to be – you can't use anything off the shelf anymore. You have to redesign all your accessories to handle 48 volts. So that's a huge step, and that's kind of why it hasn't really happened in the regular automotive world, because – all this stuff that they, you know, have on their shelf that they use, they're going to have to change all that out. And no one wants to be the first to kind of do that. It's like a big kind of, you know, it's just a risk, and companies are risk averse. But yeah, so this could be the, I'm not sure how much this will cause other companies to jump on the 48 volt wagon. I know other automakers have been looking at it for years and haven't moved yet, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I have one more thought that, again, Tesla fans aren't going to like. Oh. The range, which came in where we thought it were, but it's very realistic, whether it's 120, 140 kilowatt hour battery pack, 320 miles, 250 miles on the base model rear wheel drive, which it's Tesla, so it's going to be 200, isn't it, real world? And you start doing stuff. It's probably going to be 100, 180. The reason I feel slightly conned this morning, it's the afternoon here, now the next day, is that I'm wondering, prove me wrong, if the 4680 presentation battery day was the most overhyped and under-delivered product launch in tech history. We were told where all these graphs were showing it's 10% better in this, 9% better in this, 8%, and then maybe some improvements that Tesla get control of the form factor and some chemistry, and they're making stuff themselves. And the fact that a car company, you know, because Tesla has for a long time been into making cells themselves. Like, people don't realize how long the raw materials have been showing up at the Nevada Gigafactory, and they've been doing that stuff. Like, they've got more knowledge than any other car company. So that always surprises people. Tesla's not new to making cells and batteries. But that event promised us a next generation vehicle. And as Kyle mentioned in his segment, that our friend Brandon has got a 4680 Model Y. It's garbage. He says on his channel, it charges like garbage. This thing's awful. And yeah, you might say, well, they're onto their second generation 4680 cells, which they are. But are they? If they're going in the Cybertruck, like, that is 2170 levels of performance that are being delivered there. What change? And I'm not criticizing Tesla for wanting to make their own cells, and the 4680 form factor might be better for them, blah, blah, blah. But we were told on that day, we all tuned in, we all came away from that going like, wow, they've really got something here. And they blatantly didn't. It's all smoke and mirrors, isn't it? So it might get better over time. It almost certainly will get better over time. But if I was working at Ford, GM, Rivian, I'd have gone to bed last night being like, cool. So they haven't reinvented the wheel or pulled a rabbit out of a hat. They've got the same technology that we've got to work with. Bring it on. Good competition.
I just mentioned, Nick Nordic corrects me, 48 volt is standard for mild hybrids with one starter / generator in Europe. And also Nebula 1701 mentions that the Celestiq has a 48 volt system. That's not really on the road yet. Well, I saw a test vehicle on the road already, but it's not being, they haven't made deliveries yet. Yeah. So the one thing I wanted to talk about before we go is like some accessories. I know that seems a little bit, you know, maybe not super important, but I thought it'd be worth just pointing out a few things about it, because if nothing else, it's I don't want to say comedy, but actually there's some good information here as well. So because this was not mentioned in the presentation. So the Cybertruck has under seat a storage bin, and you can get pay $250 for some dividers for that under seat storage area. Well, also not mentioned is the there's some under bed lockable storage as well. It's not big enough to fit a tire, which actually, let's scroll down here real quick. So there's a bunch of different accessories, right? So there's the spare tire plus toolkit accessory for $1,250. You can get this, you know, full size wheel, but it has to sit in the back of your truck where your range extender would have to sit. It's too big to fit in the under bed storage space, which is kind of I feel like that's a miss, but yeah. So what else was there? Okay. So you have your basic tie downs and things in here. The base camp, $3,000 tent from the back of your truck. Now I'm sure they will sell some of these, and you don't need poles. I guess you can just plug it into an air compressor and it just blows up, and you just have those two poles on the front to hold up the foyer flap thing there, and it looks pretty good, but man, and it folds up and sits into your truck like that. But $2,900, that's, I don't know. If y'all, well, and this is one other thing. So they've mentioned this in the past. So you can get the Cybertruck in different colors. That's going to be $6,500 for a painted color. Or you can get satin clear protection. So I guess this would be, if you really don't want to get a lot of fingerprints on your truck, I think this might be one way of keeping all that kind of stuff down to a minimum. You can get for $5,000 a clear paint film on your Cybertruck, which, you know, I thought was at least worth mentioning. You have your crossbars on the front. We've seen those bumper protectors. I don't even know what that's about, but I don't know.
That tailgate ramp doesn't look nearly as cool as the one they had on the original they had the original Cybertruck event. If you remember, it looked really futuristic. Now it just looks like a regular ramp.
Hey, Tom, before we go, I know we're on a bit of a time limit today. Before we go, have you got any final thoughts on the range extender? Or any more thinking about that? Because it really confuses me. Like, obviously, you have to go to as Kyle mentioned, it's going to be between 700 and 1,000 pounds. Yeah. It's going to be a service, you can't lift that, so service center appointment. But people are saying, you know, can I have it in my garage and use it vehicle to home, vehicle to grid? But, you know, you don't want to mess around with 800 volts. That's going to give you a really bad day if you stick your finger in the wrong hole, so to speak. So have any more thoughts on how that could possibly integrate? How it could, does it have like cooling inside it and thermal management? Like, what's the deal?
I mean, it has to have some sort of cooling and thermal management. So there has to be some kind of connections that pump glycol through. I don't know. I think it would almost have to. Imagine that in the heat. It's black in the back of the truck, driving in Arizona in the summer when it's 110 degrees and the sun baking on it, and the battery is going to be roasting at like 180, 190 degrees. It's going to feel like, that's what like pavement gets out there. So it has to have some sort of thermal management in it. I don't know. I have no idea how it'll work. If you want to use it at home, like you're saying, for on-site energy storage, it'd be a great dual use for it. But then how do you get the thing up into the truck? You're talking about service centers putting it in and out for you. If you're going to have it in your house, how do you move it? And a lot of people have, don't have garages like me. I mean, I do have a garage here, but all my electric and service and where I'd want my battery energy storage is downstairs in the basement. So, you know, that wouldn't work. I wouldn't be able to get it down there. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to work. I kind of feel like we're not going to learn the details on this for a while. I could be wrong, but I think it's one of those things. I think they're going to be kicking down the road for a little while. Like, we're not going to get a finished product and have it available for a little while. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know how it'll work. I really can't think that there would be a big uptake on this.
Kyle said they have to take it to the service center to have it installed and uninstalled, which sounds like a big pita. Well,
then how do you get it into the truck to take it to the service center, Don?
Good point. Maybe it lives at the service center. Maybe they store it there at the service center.
Well, then you can't use it for energy storage at your house.
That's my the other point. That's because this thing is actually perfect for, you know, it's a power wall. It's the biggest power wall out there yet, but you can't use it for that.
So, and it takes up, Elon said, about a third of the bed. The picture could be deceiving, but that looks like it's like 40% of the bed. And that's a big difference. If you're using,
I saw somebody else say that too.
You know, it looks a lot bigger. And I don't know. It's weird. It's you know, I almost think it's one of those things that, and this is just pure speculation, that Elon insisted that they design and make because he, you know, promised they were going to have a 500-mile truck. Right. So, you know, damn it. Figure out a way to make this thing go 500 miles. Well, we could, you know, have this big giant battery that we drop in the back and, you know, people could use it when they're towing, but how's that going to affect the towing? It's obviously you're going to have to lower the amount that you can tow and even haul with it in the back because it's dead weight sitting back there. I don't know. It's definitely it's a strange option to make. It wouldn't be something that I want.
Nebula mentions that Ford has a patent for a range extender battery pack in their Lightning beds, right? I'm not sure. I know Rivian does.
I don't think it was a battery pack. I think it was like Ford's patent. I thought it was for like a ICE engine that would plug into the back there or something. I could be wrong. I forget. But they patented it, but they never really worked on it.
You know, right. Companies patent stuff all the time and never, you know, roll them up because some things just aren't really practical, it seems. Yeah.
And one last thing, I know we're going to be going soon. I know this sounded tremendously negative, the three of us, and there's a lot to criticize. But on the positive side, I will say that, you know, I applaud when people step out of the comfort zone and do things that are against the grain and try to, you know, push the envelope. And we have to give credit to Tesla for that. They went out there and did something that is as unconventional as you could ever imagine looks wise. And then they said, we're going to invent a new cold rolled steel, you know, to make this, you know, exoskeleton. And they did, you know, and, you know, will it be a successful vehicle overall in the long term? I don't think we could say that yet. You know, originally I thought that it was pretty locked in. It would be, but now that we're seeing the final results, I don't know if this is going to be good for Tesla in the long run. I don't know if they're going to sell a lot of them, enough of them to make it a profitable vehicle. I don't know once, you know, the other vehicles, once the Silverado's out, once Ford second generation truck's out, how good this is going to look. Once the Ram comes out with that range extender, it's interesting. But I do want to say that I do appreciate when companies step out of their comfort zone, and Tesla did with this. Elon said that, you know, his hubris is what caused them to make the Falcon Wing doors and the Model X. And they learned a lesson with that because, you know, they could have had the vehicle come out so much sooner if they didn't do that. And I learned my lesson. Well, he didn't learn his lessons. He went back to that same thing with, you know, like I know they say we can't build it, but damn it, we're going to build it. And
that's right.
It looks like they did. So, I give him credit for that. But overall, if you go back and watch his original introduction of Cybertruck, if you can watch that video and then watch this video back to back, you're going to be disappointed. There's absolutely No way around it.
One thing, final thing from me before we go, that again, I've seen nobody mention this until there's been no real discussion at any of the websites, blogs that I've been looking at, is the world that it gets born into, in that 2024 is such a different world than 5 years ago in terms of interest rates and how people are getting into cars at the moment. The low interest rate, low auto loan, the idea of, you know, I can't really afford a $40,000 or $50,000 car, but I can finance that and I can just about afford payments over 5 years. The US, month on month on month, is reporting its highest delinquency rates on loan repayments. And next year is going to be gnarly in the US auto loan industry, as people can't afford repayments. And it's cheaper to stop repaying and say, come and get the thing from my driveway, because... And this is happening already, and it's going to get worse next year. And Tesla are having to launch a product. Like, look, all the car companies are having to launch products into the world, but particularly this, because it's such a big time gap between the two, into a world where $100,000 truck is, frankly, supercar territory and mortals can't. Now, a lot of people spend that on trucks. I get that. But mortals can't think about $80,000 or $100,000 for a vehicle in the same way that a few years ago, maybe they could do what was called the Tesla stretch and get it. So on that side, I don't feel sorry for Tesla because it's the same playing field for everyone. But in a way, I feel sorry for them because they're unveiling a truck that's so much worse than they said it would be. And it's coming into a world which is so different to what the people who took out those $100 reservations thought. And so I think a lot of people really want the vehicle, but won't be able to make the numbers add up. And it might be they have to wait, you know, 1, 2, 3 years for finances to change, and then they'll get one or get a used one or something like that. So I think I haven't seen that discussion had properly yet either. And I do feel for Tesla in that way.
And Dom, one last thing before I turn it over to you to wrap things up. You know, this is the first vehicle that Tesla's launching that they didn't own the market at that point. Like when the Model S came out, let's go back when Roadster came out. I know there's only a couple thousand. There was nothing like that available. When Model S came out, there were no cars that could, electric vehicles that could go that far, that could charge that fast. There was nothing like it. When the 3 came out, nothing really, no direct competition. Same with the Y. There was really nothing that you could put it right up against, honestly, and say this, you know, well, which one of these two do I want to get? Now there's a lot of competition for the Y and even for the 3. But when it launched, there really wasn't. This is the first time that Tesla's launching a truck where, you know, we could say, oh, I wanted to have that Cybertruck, but, oh, you know, it's a little disappointing now. Maybe I'll look at Silverado EV. Maybe I'll look at that Rivian. Maybe I'll look at Ford. Maybe I'll buy a used F-150 Lightning. There's an alternative. The Tesla buyers for their previous vehicles didn't have a competent alternative. And so that's absolutely going to affect the uptake on this for sure.
Right. Okay. Well, we get to get going. So I guess I'll leave my comments for later. I just really want to drive it. And personally, I don't really like the design. I've decided it's taken me 4 years to kind of come to a conclusion. I don't like the proportions. I don't mind the stainless steel and the shape, but just the way the proportions look, it looks kind of wrong to me. I don't know. Anyway, more of that in the future. So that brings us to the end of this show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining. We really appreciate having you here with us, and we'll see you all again next time. Ciao.